Time now for the Yahoo Sports College Podcast with Dan Wetzel.
Kiffin says he texts Saban to this day. Saban never responds.
Pete Thamel.
Hey, Nick, you up?
And SI's Pat Forty.
Let's put it this way. Like, all right, we were rooting for the Bud Light Bandit to continue to get away. Remember the guy that had the five cases or whatever in Texas? Yeah. This guy, we are rooting to get caught.
Here's Pat, Pete, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. We're going to get this right out of the way. Fat Bear Week. Who was the victor in predicting Fat Bear Week? Me. My man, 747, was voted the fattest bear at the national park in Alaska. I don't know which park it is.
Doesn't matter.
One of those ones with rivers and like salmon and mountains. Looks beautiful. I defeated Sully's pick. I defeated Pat's pick of, who'd you pick, Pat?
Walker. The humongous rear end.
Who picked Chunk? That Pete?
Pete took Chunk.
Chunk got me to the finals. I'm not going to rip Chunk. You know, no Chunk match. Got a nice run. Yeah.
No match.
You
the
got
Lakers Chunk. Over the Heat. Gentlemen's sweep. It was a gentleman's sweep.
Chunk got VCU in the semi, though. You got the, you know, the Cinderella, whereas we were UMass and Kentucky 96 battling it out. I mean, it was a heavyweight semi between
truly
747 and Walker.
If you're not familiar with the Fat Bear Week, it's on explore.org. You vote who's the fattest bear is at this park. Tremendous content. Really is.
I did the new download on my iPhone, and when I have my AirPods in, it reads the texts that come in if I don't have my phone. So the like Siri voice reading Pat complimenting his bear's derriere, demanding a recount yesterday, just sounded very funny.
Yes, I believe I referred to his magnificently massive ass, actually.
That's what you said. So it was like, Siri be like, his magnificently it was just, I was just like, oh, not what I expected to hear today.
Explore.org, the sports writers there termed it 747's voluminous visage. Eclipse 32's chunky chassis. No longer the runner up. 747 fulfills the fate of the fat and fabulous as he heads off to hibernation. Sleep well, dear bear. Sleep well, king.
We gotta hire that guy.
That's good.
He's better writer than we get anything I did this year. If you've read my NBA finals content, it's probably not.
And we've also seen your picks, which is why you're trumpeting this pick, because you got one right.
First off, Sully, the picks need to be put up there. I'm changing them right now. 10, that's a loss for Pete. That's a loss for Sully.
Oh, no, you're not putting the Bears thing in the race for the
cases. Yes, I'm putting it in there. It's a victory.
No way.
10, I got my 10.
I didn't even get a pick, so you can't put a loss there.
All right, I'll give you a no contest.
No, this is just, this is a Cuban election, man. You can't just all of a sudden, Fat Bear Week, make the pick and you win, decide to put in the race for the case standings.
I think we picked like Abilene Christian against Abilene Central High School this year. At least we got to see pictures of the Bears. Nobody knew anything.
Sully, go back in. Dan change.
The vote is 3-1 against rigging this.
To the victor goes the spoils.
Dan, this is the only thing you've actually researched this year, so I know you're taking pride in it. But at the same time, people aren't looking at our records for how we evaluate the size of Bears chassis. Is that
you don't know that? You don't know that. Don't know that. All right, let's get on to college football. We have, I think, 31 games right now scheduled. As we know, at no point have all those games actually been played when I announced that on Wednesday. But we got a couple doozies, and I want to start with number one Clemson for number seven Miami. The U. Is the U back? Both 3-0. It's going to be the 7:30 primetime Saturday night game on ABC in Clemson. Won't have the crowd quite the same, unfortunately. But should be a great spectacle. Huge tests, obviously, for Miami. They have made great strides this season. They're looking pretty good. but this will be the ultimate test. I will say this. Obviously, I don't care who wins. I am not a Miami fan. I am not a Tiger fan. I am just here. But I think college football will be a lot more interesting if there is a challenger in the ACC to Clemson. And the team, other than Florida State, which is a total disaster, the team most likely to be able to get their program up to where they can compete regularly with Clemson is the Miami Hurricanes, because we have seen it in the past. I think Mac Brown and North Carolina are coming. I think, you know, Virginia Tech's got possibilities. It's always there. But if you are just looking at the overall state of college football and the overall excitement level that ACC football can provide, Miami winning this game or really making it a game as a statement and further bolstering their program so that there is a potential challenger to Clemson in that league would be the ideal result. So I would go there. I don't know whether they can do it, but the ACC needs some excitement, and this is a rare burst of, hey, really good ACC game. I'm really interested to see what happens. Appointment viewing, not just, you know, I mean, look, Clemson's a 2-touchdown favorite in this thing, is what it is, but I think there's a chance for Miami here. Pat, what do you think?
I agree. This is everything the ACC needs, a splashy game with the name brand team in the conference by far against a former name brand program that people can still attach onto and say, hey, it would be fun if Miami's good. This brings a lot of natural juice to it. It also, I mean, it's a heck of a quarterback matchup. Derek King has been excellent since he got to Miami. Trevor Lawrence, we know. To me, this is, it may not live up to being as great as the 2016 game between Deshaun Watson and Lamar Jackson, but on paper going in, it's the same sort of feel where you've got really, really good quarterbacks in a game that that will bring some real juice to the season so far, because we just haven't had a lot of matchups that you say, oh, wow, I can't wait for that one. And I think this one is it. I was on the Miami Zoom calls yesterday. Manny Diaz was really good talking about this game where, you know, people were asking, you know, how are you approaching this biggest game and everything? And he said, well, we're just trying to get to the point where these games are not extraordinary, where it's not just, you know, this huge game. He said, we want to be like Clemson. He said, for Clemson, this is what they do. You know, every game, this is like, you know, they play four of these games every year. Here comes the challenger. And, you know, here comes national TV and game day and all that. Like, okay, business as usual. And Diaz said that's basically what they're trying to get to. He said, too, though, this was a really good point. He said, it's a statement game until the next statement game that sets up the further statement game. And that's kind of the way this goes, is you're climbing up the ladder. Everybody, you know, when they played Florida State and that was game day, I was like, oh, that was a big deal, even though Florida State sucked. So then you win that game. And so then the next game becomes the next big game. And you hope to keep building as big games come along. But we have all seen how many times a year, Pete, you know, several times a year, somebody looks like that promising up-and-coming team in September, October, and then they run into a Clemson or Alabama, and we see what the reality is.
Yes, and I have a feeling that's going to happen to Miami here, because the gap to get in the conference title conversation is much bigger, is much easier to get to. And Miami's done that. They've gone from a middling team to a conference contender. But to be competitive with the conference winner, the assumed, presumed, and often, I believe, 5 times in a row, Clemson, maybe more.
I think so. 15, yeah, 16, 17, 18, 19, 5 in a row.
Yeah. So many in a row we've forgotten, like you've just taken for granted. And I really think the most fascinating thing I'm going to look for on Saturday is Miami's offensive line. Miami's offensive line was wretched last year. I believe they gave up 51 sacks. They were the worst in the ACC in sacks allowed. They were downright brutal. Now, they have the least sacks allowed in the ACC. Now, some of that is the way they're playing, right? If you are playing some tempo offense, you wear out your opponent. There's myriad things. Because you're getting rid of the ball quicker, because Derek King is slippery, so he's not going to get sacked as much. There's many, many factors that go into that. But that does not necessarily mean your rancid offensive line has become a great offensive line. It means you've mitigated it. Now, Clemson's defensive line, historically, certainly, and then there's some very good young talent on it right now, is that's been their edge, right? That was their edge against Alabama. That's been that. Now, they've had to cycle in some young guys, and I'll be curious. Is it Xavier Thomas, the defensive end, who was going to sit out, then he came back, but he's not in shape. Like they're rounding around in that position. But if Miami can hold up front, and the offense is going to allow him to do that to some extent. But if it all falls apart for Miami on Saturday, that is the place where you can look. And look down the road at Florida State. The single most difficult position group to overhaul is an offensive line. You can get a quarterback from the portal. You can rejigger some things. You cannot make guys grow bigger and stronger. Like, that takes time and it takes nurturing. Miami's group has clearly gotten better. Now we're gonna take a pause and say, okay, are they actually good enough to go toe-to-toe with Clemson?
Yeah, and look, this is, again, I said, 14-point dogs on the road. This isn't just the conference bully. This is a national bully. Clemson is not fading in any way, any way we can see. The offense has not been, I would say, maybe not as impressive as I was expecting so far, but they still got talent there. And they got the quarterback, they got the running back, all of that. So even if it is a game, I think it would matter. This is a team the ACC needs to be good, to be a really exciting league. You know, Miami, we talked about this during COVID. We thought that COVID really helped Miami's recruiting, oddly, because they just started dominating South Florida talent where kids could not travel around and visit last spring. And they just started loading up on kids. They got the 11th ranked recruiting class in the country, which is really good. They've got a bunch of 4 and 5 stars. 17 of these recruits are from what anyone would consider South Florida. The three, Palm Beach, Broward, and Miami-Dade County. And 20 of the 22 are what Howard Schnellenberger once called the, you know, state of Miami or something like that, basically. You get over to Fort Myers. I think there's a kid in Orlando or something like that. If we get those guys, we can win the national championship. And Miami's getting them. Now, these kids are in high school, but that momentum is all there. And a really big time performance here, even in a loss, would go a long way for Miami. And I think it will be a challenge. And I think it'll be a good chance to see exactly what this Clemson team is, because it has not been, that offense has not been pouring up huge points. And, you know, maybe there's a little something missing. So really, really good Saturday night game, though. I think for the first time in a while, you have I'm probably forgetting some, but it's certainly a game in the ACC that you kind of make appointment viewing towards.
I would say first time in 4 years, 2016, that we've got you got a game that on paper, it looks like, okay, bring it on Clemson, you know, a team that's going to step in there. And again, they may not win. They may not cover the 14, but at least on paper, it's like, okay, this is a good matchup. Let's see it.
Tigers have not lost a league game since 2017.
Right. It's funny. They have one close game every year. You know, last year was North Carolina, where they had a 2-point conversion to win and they missed it. The year before was when Trevor Lawrence got hurt and Chase Bryce had to lead them back against Syracuse. 17, they lost in the Carrier Dome when Kelly Bryant got hurt early in that game and they didn't have a backup to go to. 16, was that the fluke against either NC State or against Pittsburgh? You know, there's one game every year where they either lose or they don't lose. The last 2 years, they just haven't lost any.
Yeah, and it's funny. All those games, we're not like, oh, there was a team with equitable talent. Like, they just laid an egg, you know? Like, right. Or it was kind of fluky injury stuff that sort of pulled them down to reality. Clemson this year, and we talked about this last year a little bit, they're like the Yogi Berra restaurant. It's so popular, nobody goes there anymore. Like, Clemson's been so good. I didn't watch a snap of them play Virginia. You know, there's like other games on and everything's going on. So I'll be really curious. You know, it's appointment viewing. And I mean, how lucky are we as college football fans, guys? We get that game this Saturday, and then next Saturday we get Georgia-Alabama. So back-to-back Saturday nights just right on. With monster games. Like, just monster games. So I'm fired up.
One more little Clemson bit. Obviously, Houston Texans fired Bill O'Brien, former Penn State coach, this week, and their quarterback is Deshaun Watson. There was speculation, seems baseless to me, that Dabo Sweeney would be on the list of the Texans. Dabo shot that thing down really quickly, and I think for good reason. I'm kind of baffled at that one. Do you think Dabo Sweeney would be a good NFL coach? I don't.
No.
Like,
no.
Dabo is about recruiting, motivation, organization, culture, not,
yes.
You know, I was like, where is who's coming up with this? Great college coach. I just don't think he's an NFL coach.
No, I don't think he is wired in any way for the NFL, really. I don't. You know, he's got a great personality, but you need more than that to be an NFL coach. And I just think that, as you said, he is an incredible recruiter. He relates well to that age group. And I don't think he really would cotton well to the idea of being in a franchise facility where he's not the big dog.
Let's just play conspiracy theory here because it's a lot more fun. So Jacksonville is sputtering like they really have, you know, for the past couple of years. The Jets are a total mess and they're probably going to get the first pick in the draft. Dabo is like, in his mind, it's not like a no, I'm never going to the NFL. Like there is some openness there from what I understand. All right. So does he go after this season? And Jacksonville is the place where there's been some mutual intrigue. Now, again, I'm not like saying it's going to happen or anything like that. But like if there was a place, that would be the place. Dabo wouldn't sell in New York. All right. The Jets, he would get alive in the Jets. He wouldn't make it past his like Wednesday press conference. All right.
He wouldn't want to make it past his Wednesday
press. Yes. Imagine Dabo trying to drive around New Jersey. Like he'd have a whole press conference on jug handle turns. It just wouldn't be a great fit. But the Dabo Trevor pairing to the next level is certainly something that I don't think will ever happen, but it's certainly going to hit the speculation wire at some point. So yeah. we might as well just get that out there right now. And I do think like at a certain point in college, like if you were and Dabo is an icon at this point, they're gonna have a statue of him there. You know, he's clearly pushed that place to the highest levels. Do you say, like, I want to go give this a shot? Now, we have seen, and Dabo has led a paradigm shift in what college football coaches look like, all right? Now, they look more like the recruiters, the energy guys, the connection guys. Look around the NFL. There are some terrible football coaches right now. Adam Gase is employed at the New York Jets as a head football coach. Like, I'm bringing this up more to say, like, I don't think Dabo's going to the NFL immediately. I think it could happen. But what I do think is the NFL is just going to stop microwaving these completely mediocre guys who have, like, if you've ever been around Adam Gase, talk about someone who has no ability to connect with people, no ability to motivate people. Like, you watch Adam Gase right now, and you're like, that team hates him because they are just not playing hard. So you have this sort of, like, flotsam and jetsam, to microwave one of my favorite terms, of NFL coaches. And you see the caliber of coaches getting hired. You're like, man, that's like not particularly that impressive. So, you know, like Matt Patricia's about to get cycled out. He's another non-connector. You go through, like, do NFL franchises start to look more to college in order to provide some kind of energy jolt, some kind of connection? Like the Generation Z that we've seen obviously cycle through college is now populated the NFL. Like I think it's a fair conversation to say, and college coaches, there's really going to be no movement within this year, right? Like just because there won't be many high-end jobs open that we've talked about. So do we see NFL franchises reaching more to college? What do you think?
So the most impactful hire, to first off, would Dabo take a shot at it? It's very possible. I mean, Steve Spurrier took a shot at it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, Steve Spurrier coached some pro ball at the USFL, but Steve Spurrier was almost like the quintessential college football coach, the ball coach, right?
Yeah.
And he took a shot at it and it did not go well, but as it normally doesn't for NFL coaches, like Bill O'Brien last January was in the playoffs and had a 24-0 lead on the Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes. He never won another game and was gone 4 weeks into the season. Like, think about that. So Bill O'Brien was not he was a bad executive at Houston. He's not a bad coach, but like he was leading 24-0 on the Super Bowl champs.
Yeah.
And he
in the playoffs. I mean, in made the playoffs. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, they couldn't get a quarterback. I mean, they've had a million things. Now he made his own bed, all of that, but that's how quick it can change. But the most impactful coaching NFL hire that we've seen is Cliff Kingsbury. Cliff Kingsbury is not Dabo Sweeney. He was not coming out of Texas Tech with a bunch of national championships. He had just happened to have coached and never won Baker Mayfield for a year. And Patrick Mahomes, and he got a job, but it worked. It's working. Yeah. So to me, you're looking and saying the guy I think who they would be most intrigued at in college football is Lincoln Riley, who has run an offense, this modern offense, and made obviously Baker Mayfield and then Kyler Murray. And, all, you know, I mean, he's got this thing rolling. That to me is an NFL coach who's coaching in college, a potential guy. I just don't think Dabo's that guy because it's not. And maybe Dabo's personality, which is obviously much more colorful or publicly or charismatic publicly than a Lincoln Riley. Maybe I'm underestimating what he does X and O wise. But to me, Dabo's system is Dabo's one of the greatest motivators you'll ever see. So I just don't see him as that. Now, Lincoln Riley, I think Lincoln Riley's going to get some calls. And,
sure.
And he may already does. And now you go, well, maybe what if it's Lincoln Riley? He says, eh, you know, Oklahoma, how high can I go here? People are going to get frustrated.
I mean, Lincoln Riley fits the LaFleur, Nagy, McVay thinking, you know, the offensive mind guy that's going to come in and he's going to call plays and he's going to put juice in the offense right away and we're going to scheme him up. Well, I don't think Dabo's like incapable of scheme or anything like that. You know, I don't think that's his forte. I don't think that's what he does best and would be his selling point. But if you want, Pete, now that you've got me thinking conspiracy theories and stuff, here's this one, okay? Dabo goes, gets the Jacksonville thing works out, okay? You somehow it stars a line for Dabo and Trevor Lawrence to both go to Jacksonville, which would be very much in their comfort zone geographically, probably. It doesn't work out after 3 years. Now Dabo is free and clear to go when mama calls him home to Alabama to replace Nick Saban. Because it'd be harder to leave straight from Clemson to go to Alabama than it would be to go not win in the NFL and then go to Alabama.
That's fairly realistic, whether it's, you know, whether it's Jacksonville or elsewhere.
Yeah.
Two more kind of coaching thoughts here. One is like, if I were the Texans, and you have Deshaun Watson, you have him signed for the next 4 years, I believe. They just did an extension. Why don't you go after Lincoln Riley hard, right? Like, why don't you just throw the kitchen sink at him? I mean, look, like, if you took the Patriots team priest and made him your GM, and you're going to be paying Bill O'Brien this far, like, at least go in and, like, that would be what I would do if I were there. Knowing that, like, the options in the NFL are pretty limited, I think that's. Look what Mike McCarthy's doing in Dallas right now. I think they're one and three.
And that's a Super Bowl. That's a Super Bowl coach. I think it's Eric Bieniemy. Yeah. It's we got some coordinators that are going to be in that mix. But go ahead.
Yeah. Could we see Billy O back in college?
Come back.
Sure. I don't think that's out of the question.
I don't think that's out of the question, but Bill. It's not out of the question. I mean, you get him the right job and he, you know, he had a great situation at Penn State, but I think he will get another opportunity in the NFL, I think, as a coach.
Yeah, he probably will.
It's hard to want to leave the NFL and go to college. It's just a different deal. But we'll see. I don't think it's out of the question. He did a good job at Penn State under impossible. Yes. Circumstances.
Terrible circumstances.
I mean, he took that job before the scope and of the penalties that came down and the toxicity of Jerry Sandusky fully hit the recruiting trail. Like, if he had known, I mean, that was a horrible job at that point.
Yeah.
It's hard to overstate how toxic that all was. Like,
right.
It's just really hard to overstate it.
You know, and all the players that were able to transfer immediately eligible, and I think their offensive line was completely decimated. You know, they had like very few scholarship offensive linemen to work
and
with.
And the school was feuding. The Paterno faction. It was horrible. And walk in and you've got nothing to do with any of it. And you don't even know who's helping you. And it was a little like, I remember this being a thing, because it's a little like when Bob Knight got fired. You're the Penn State coach. Joe Paterno has been recruiting, you know, whatever, Scranton Central High School for 50 years. And everybody at Scranton Central High School loves the guy. And now Penn State gets rid of him. And even though you're the new guy and you did nothing wrong, you walk into that place and they're like, we ain't helping Penn State right now.
Right.
And instead of normally getting that in-state help, they're like, hell no. You guys did our guy wrong.
Yeah.
And so like there were so many traps and landmines taking that job over that you're just like, oh my God, I don't even know what's hitting me here. I don't know all this stuff.
It was still toxic when James Franklin got there. And even like, I want to say it was early into his second year, people were wanting Franklin out and Sandy Barber had to come out and basically publicly support him. You think back now, I mean, you know, now Franklin's being paid a mint and he's done very well and they're consistently back to being successful. And people are looking at that. I mean, it's hard to believe, but he had to deal with the backlash of all that too after O'Brien.
Yeah, Joe Moore had a lot of people on the Big Ten, think that saved James Franklin in a lot of ways. Yeah, well, I remember too, just like after, Paterno was ousted and then I believe died very soon after, right?
Yeah, winter.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like a couple months later.
Yeah, very soon after. So like that, I believe, coincided with Urban Meyer getting the Ohio State job. And I remember Noah Spence, who was a 5-star defensive end recruit, ended up getting thrown out of Ohio State, but he's a very good player. And Cam Williams, who's a linebacker from the Boston area, Brent Williams' son, the former Patriot, they both immediately flipped like Penn State to Ohio State. Like it fell apart fast there. And Bill did a good job. Of course, Christian Hackenberg was his big recruit out of Virginia. That just didn't really work out in the NFL. At least he didn't draft him,
Yeah, that was kind of a sign. Yeah, actually, that fall before Sandusky, it looked like this could be Paterno's last year. I mean, and that was the thing. Urban Meyer was kind of staring at Ohio State or Penn State. You didn't know what was going to open, what was going to happen, because Ohio State had Fickell as the interim coach. It was very
right.
Like the fortunes could have changed, but anyway, that's where we're at. Sully, I see that you in the document returned the win totals back to of the race.
I did it.
Good job,
Sully. It wasn't sorry, it was me. That's the first time I've ever contributed to the Google Doc for the podcast.
I am changing the Google Doc right now. I have a 10th win. All right,
little do we know that it's a completely different doc that I keep. You can do whatever you want in the doc. It's not going to change the actual master doc.
I am playing the season under protest. 747 was a victory. I get it. You guys lost. That's it. I don't care what we bet on. That's it. All right, back to this week. Because we weren't expecting to talk that much about coaching carousel, but it's always fun. Sully is chomping at the bit for this topic.
Oh, yeah.
He's dubbed it Prove It Week. Prove It Week for his volunteers. The Vols. What do they have, the longest win streak in the country? Is that what you're calling it?
Oh, boy, they're proud of their win streak.
They got a win streak.
They are so proud of that win
streak. They're also on a 33-game losing streak to top 10 opponents, and unfortunately, Georgia is one of those. So, big game, though. We will give them that.
So, take your mic off. Just come talk with us. You know you want to.
This would be a chance.
We have badgered you and your Vols.
Sully, make your case why the Vols are going to prove themselves this week against Georgia. And show they are real. And Coach Pruitt was a great idea.
You want this now? We're making this pick later on.
Just do it now, and then we know who you're picking. Jeez.
Yeah, we know who you're picking.
Oh, I don't know about that. I might shock you with this pick. Well, I got to say, for a team that is so sorry not to have Mike Leach. Oh my God, we got this dunderhead for a coach, right, Pete? That's what you use. That's another crush you have, dunderhead. The Vols are playing tough, clean brand of football against Mizzou, 4-for-4 on fourth down, 5-for-5 in the red zone, 3 penalties for 20 yards, 0 turnovers for 2
against
games.
Against who?
Against Mizzou, exactly.
Okay, now, just checking.
The big question, you're let me finish. You guys pulled me into this, so let me get my 10 seconds. And of course, now you got to do it against one of the best defenses in the country and the remnants of a hurricane, so that's going to be really fun to deal with. And I think they're going to be able to do it. Jerry Garantano has improved this season, 65% completion rate under pressure. Georgia's going to get after him, but I think that's a wash there. What Tennessee has to do on the other side of the ball, it's going to stop that Georgia offense. I think they're going to try to run it down their throat. That defensive line for Tennessee has been up and down all season. You have Henry Toto, who's a stud linebacker, don't get me wrong, but that's my concern for Tennessee is that front seven against Georgia's front. To be honest with you, I think Georgia wins, but Vols cover in a tight one.
Okay. Now, can we talk about who they've beaten in the 8-game winning streak?
Oh yeah, it's been a nobody. This is why this is a prove it game, and I think they do prove it.
South Carolina, Jetsam, right? South Carolina twice, Missouri twice, UAB, Kentucky, Vanderbilt, and by a point in a miracle comeback, Indiana.
That's so, that's two wins over South Carolina that more than that Georgia team has in that same time stretch, I want to say.
Well, you want to compare overall records between Georgia and Tennessee in that time
stretch?
Yeah,
let's go for it. Let's go for it, because it's complete lopsided towards Georgia. They've beaten actual teams. Tennessee hasn't. That's why I'm picking Georgia.
Okay. Yeah.
This is getting spicy. We got interruptions. This is like Trump Biden. Somebody tell, would you just shut up, man? Yeah. Somebody call each other a clown. Let's do
I'm
this.
Not
going like to
call
this.
Sully a clown. I have too much respect for him.
40 versus Sully. Good, keep going, gentlemen.
Yeah.
No, I think it's going to be a close game. I think it's going to be really fun. It's going to be a classic, just 14-10, nasty, in the rain, SEC East, the slobber knocker. It's going to be, I'm super excited, needless to say.
It should be. I mean, it's good. This is what you want. You want Tennessee to get back to this point, right? I mean, the SEC East was fun when Florida and Tennessee were knocking heads year after year. I mean, that goes back to the 90s and up till, you know, maybe 2007 or so before Tennessee fell apart forever, like for 12 straight years. But that was great. And, you know, Tennessee fans care. Sully is not alone here, you know. So to have them in the mix is better. It's more fun. But this is, they're in the same situation as Miami. I wrote about it in the 40-yard dash. This is prove it week for both two programs that have a lot of great tradition and a lot of great memories, not a lot of great present. And we'll see if they can revive some of that.
Yeah. There's ways you can like talk yourself into Tennessee making this a game, right? Like, do we trust the law firm at quarterback for Georgia? Nah, particularly. I do love Tennessee's offensive line. I do think that is a, you know, that is a bona fide high-end SEC unit. You know, there have been flashes and there's some consistency, and like they are at the point where they had not been in previous regimes where they're winning the games they're supposed to, right? So like, credit Jeremy Pruitt, and I was certainly skeptical of that hire, as I was of Coach Fulmer as the AD, for pulling Tennessee back to respectability. All that said, and we can talk about it a little more later, like no way I think that the leap to be a contender in your division, like we were talking about before, as opposed to being an actual like factor in winner of that, is quite big, and I don't think Tennessee is there yet.
Going to be a very, very interesting game. We'll make our picks later, although I think we all hinted at them there, but it is good to see the Vols in a big one. I have an update on how much we need Big Ten football to return.
Okay.
The other day, I think this is the last weekend before the Big Ten, or we got two more to go?
I think two. 24.
24. 23, 24.
We cannot, I think, Kevin Warren, please speed this up. We cannot, as someone living in the Midwest, I don't think we can survive without Big Ten football. The other day, I detailed many of the crimes that are being committed in Iowa City as the people bored and frustrated at watching Iowa State yes. win games have just lost their marbles and like passed out drunk with donuts on them and then all sorts of things. Called the cops because someone had a cat. And now we get this one. Okay. And I'm just going to read this sentence because let me see who wrote this. Sloan Terranella of the Detroit Free Press, I'm guessing, never thought she would write a story like this. A man pooped in an empty box, closed it, then left it on a shelf at a Van Buren Township Meijer, police said Tuesday. Now, Meijer is a big, huge store, like gross. It's like a it's like a Midwestern boutique Walmart. If you will.
You know what that makes me think of? It makes me think of like the conversation in the newsroom around pooped. Like, should we say defecated? Like, did you see a bunch of like stodgy editors like having a 15-minute conversation about what's the proper term?
Could have used a better word, I think. But whatever, got the thing a car. You could buy anything at Meijer, apparently including a defecation in a box. Let's just repeat. A guy walked into Meijer, took a box, crapped in the box, and then put it back on the shelf for someone to purchase. So one of his fellow Meijer customers. I'm not even going to people's court this. I think we all think death penalty is in order. Okay. Yes. I'm not even going to. They don't have the death penalty in Michigan, but they might need to bring it back for this guy. Meijer security footage recorded the suspect pooping in the aisle and then placing the box containing the feces back on the shelf.
Oh.
Okay. So there's video. Not only is there video, but they're looking for this guy. Okay. The suspect left, went to the parking, got in a light colored Ford Escape. At least he's by an American, and took off. Police said they have no leads on any suspects at this time. However, there is a picture of the guy from the security footage. They're just showing him not in the act of the crime, but he is wearing his shaved head and described as slender. He's wearing a white T-shirt and a face mask with the Michigan State logo on it.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Spartan.
Sparty.
Spartan
the
Will.
Poop bandit.
Even the Spartans' predictably sad-looking season. We need something to distract these people so they're not just running around these psychopaths.
They need to watch a 121 total yard performance
with 11 punts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, keep them out of Meyer aisles.
He's a fan of average punting.
my suspect list, I wanted to know whether D'Antonio shaved his head. We haven't gotten any information yet on that. But I did. I also sent this to Dane Fife, the assistant basketball coach, and asked if he could confirm his whereabouts on that day and time.
It
was not
like
Charles Robinson, our favorite Yahoo staffer, who's a Michigan State graduate. We've confirmed he was not in the general area at the time.
Right.
Any other Spartans?
I don't know. It's definitely not Izzo. I don't know. I mean,
here are my questions, and I have many of them, but I'll try to limit these. What aisle was he in? What box did he? I mean, like, what kind of box? Was it a box that already had something in it, or is it an empty box?
We don't. We don't know.
Okay.
The Van Buren Township is right next to Ypsilanti. Michigan State star recruit is coming from. So you got that. This details are a little. We need Sloan to come up with a better follow up here.
Yeah, Sloan needs to do a little more work on this.
It is a mystery. Why? How? I mean, he's kind of. I mean, what? Problematic.
And are there other people around when he's, you know, executing this act? I mean, what, you know, do you just walk in and just grab a box and say, hey, look at this? Or, I mean, what?
What about toilet paper?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Ooh, you bring your own? Do you premeditated pooping?
I don't know.
I think that, you know, I mean, there's many, many questions. Yeah, many questions.
There are many questions.
How did you? But right now he's free. He's on the loose.
He's on the loose.
As a Michigan resident and someone who does go to Meyer, I'm a little, I'm going to keep my head on a swivel.
Let's put it this way. Like, all right, we were rooting for the Bud Light bandit to continue to get away. Remember the guy that had the five cases or whatever in Texas? Yeah. This guy, we are rooting to get caught.
Catch him.
Yes.
The Spartan bandit.
Yes.
He will not come to the one I frequent in Detroit because, believe me, the customer's there. They catch a guy, you're catching a beating. I don't know what goes on in Van Buren Township, but you
no
come to the Meyer on
Royal
8
Oak.
Mile in Detroit, you are catching a whooping. If we stay away from our Meyer. Hey, man, it's getting dicey out there. This country's falling apart. Let's get to the other fascinating game this weekend. Whether it's competitive or not, we will see. But we have a reunion amongst two great friends, memories. Nick Saban and Lane Kiffin are back reunited. They'll meet somewhere pregame, in Oxford at Ole Miss. Saban made demand like 20 yards of social distancing because they didn't want to get near Lane. But maybe they'll talk before the game. This is one of the all-time great, like, shotgun marriages of convenience. The most stable, the most reserved, the most organized coach in America, Nick Saban, hires this wild man, Joey Freshwater, to come in and modernize his offense back in, I don't know, what it was, 2015, 2013?
14, I think. 14 was his first year.
And it worked. You know, think about Kiffin, talented guy, helped them start getting really good quarterback recruits. They weren't getting those guys before. Changed the whole thing. Great play caller. But there were some rocky moments. There was what Saban calls ass chewings, many of them during the during the games when he was yelling at him on the sideline. It's just a term I really don't like.
That was, yes,
there was the time after Alabama beat Clemson in the playoffs, or was it in the championship, when Kiffin was talking to the media outside the team bus and Saban just had the team bus leave.
Left without him. Yeah.
Left him behind.
I think it was media day.
Yeah, it was media day.
Media day.
Yeah. Media day in 15 or 16.
First, I get fired on the tarmac, Kiffin said. Now I get left behind at the national championship. I think it then again happened again before a Peach Bowl. Might have happened twice. Listen, man, you get on that bus, you don't hobnob with the media. Then after, in the middle of the playoffs, Kiffin is told he has mutually agreed to no longer be the offensive coordinator and go take his job at FAU, which only because Saban was able to shout down any questions was just not the most, and they went on to lose.
Yeah.
But switching offensive coordinators in the middle of the playoffs is absolutely bananas.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't care if you got Steve Sarkisian waiting. You don't switch in the middle of the playoffs and then lose and catch no flack for it unless you are Nick Saban. That's how much Nick Saban hated Lane Kiffin.
Yeah, that was after they had completely laid an egg offensively against Washington, right? And they didn't look prepared and the play calling was terrible. And
because Kiffin was working on his next job.
Right. Since that like time. If you're going to do that crappy a job preparing us, go ahead and get out.
Kiffin has taunted Saban on social media. He'll post like the you know, he makes fun of him, calling it rat poison if you hype up the or downgrade the Alabama opponents. One time Saban had a weird, kind of funny rant about how kids on campus these days wear ripped jeans when he was growing up poor in West Virginia. You'd never rip your jeans. So then Kiffin shared a photoshopped image of Saban wearing ripped jeans. Kiffin says he texts Saban to this day. Saban never responds.
Hey, Nick, you up? I had a very, very small role in the some of the acrimony between Coach Saban and Coach Kiffin in December of 2016. Going into that Washington game, I was it's been Christmas down in South Florida where my 100-year-old grandmother lives, and Lane had got the job at FIU. And so I've known Lane for like a bunch of years since he was at USC as an assistant, and called him and said, hey, you around? Like, I'll come over, do a Q&A, something like that. He was, you know, fired up. FIU was, you know, getting a chance again. And I ended up, for the sake of efficiency, he had me meet him while he went house hunting. And it was one of the stranger afternoons of my career. Some highlights from that story, which was not well received in Tuscaloosa. Lane, quote, this will come across wrong. Now, anytime somebody says this will come across wrong,
that's where you probably stop right there, but not Lane.
This will come across wrong. But being in Tuscaloosa, and I'm paraphrasing that part, it's like dog years. 3 years is like 21.
It didn't come. Yeah, it went. It did not go well.
Did not go well. So I remember we were standing there in the foyer of this house, and he says, should I tell my joke? Of course, I'm not going to dissuade him from telling his joke, right? So, and I wrote, he can't help himself, a classic Kiffin trait, and proceeds, quote, I used to say there's constantly a daily battle between who can take more of my money between Layla, his ex-wife, and Obama. He then continues with a little fuzzy math. I figured it out. I really don't make any money. I pay around 52% in taxes. Layla gets 34.5% in the divorce. And Jimmy Sexton gets 3%. I make 9% and I'm living in Tuscaloosa. Lane Kiffin, ladies and gentlemen, an American original.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
So will Saban run it up on him if he can?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Saban does not tend to run it up, but they might not put it in park as completely as they did against, say, Missouri. You know, he kept scoring against Texas A&M. So especially, here's one good reason he might run it up, Dan. Did you hear Kiffin's jab at Nick this week? So Monday press conference, he gets asked about some player on Ole Miss's roster. And it's the last question. They cut it off after this, probably for good reason. Kiffin's answer is no, he opted out. And then immediately veers 180 degrees and says, I don't know how Alabama did this. It's amazing. Coach did a great job of somehow keeping these guys happy and, you know, not feeling like they need to go get ready for the draft with all these first rounders. These guys around the country opting out, but none are Alabama guys. Coach must have had a great plan.
That is like quintessential Lane Kiffin. Like,
yeah.
Complete wise ass, totally sarcastic, and like kind of right. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. But like, averting the question about his own team and just a wheeling around and throwing it back at Nick. Yeah.
Interesting. I don't know what he meant.
Yeah. Bama first
test. No idea.
Yes. Yeah, explain Bama it first to me or... like I'm a 5-year old.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get to the picks.
Let's get to the picks.
Try to be fairly quick here because we got we went lengthy. We will
see,
start.
Dan likes to go quick at the picks because that's when we discuss what the records are up to this point. So.
Well, we'll just ignore that part because it's under dispute. under dispute. Although I don't think there is a dispute actually.
No, there is. There's a dispute.
747 is a victory in my column. Number 19 Virginia Tech and number 8 North Carolina. Noon. On ABC, UNC is giving 5.
I'm going to take North Carolina to cover. I think they're the better team. Virginia Tech has had a heck of a start, though. I mean, they've been down like 24 guys and a couple of coaches, including their defensive coordinator, due to COVID. And they've won 2 games, and they've won them impressively. Khalil Herbert's been a great addition from Kansas. He's putting up big numbers for them. But UNC's a good defense, and I think UNC's certainly the more talented team. I think they get the offense a little more on track. Sam Howell gets going a little bit better than he has, and I think North Carolina plays its best game of the season, wins, and covers.
So I saw North Carolina Saturday at BC, and they were just a tease. Because they gained 1 million yards, they moved the ball at will, and then they just completely sputtered in the red zone. And Mack Brown actually said this today. Mack Brown was not pleased when I asked him about the self-destructing offense after the win. They needed a 2-point conversion returned to win. They were up 2. BC went into tie in the last minute, and UNC had the rare pick 2 by Trey Morrison go all the way back for a touchdown. But Mack was like a little bit like, I'm going to enjoy the wins, you jerk. Don't ask me about my offense self-destructing. But today I read an article in the News and Observer where he basically said, like, we need to be happy taking 4 yards. And UNC clearly was not happy taking 4 yards. Defenses know Sam Howell likes to go long. They've given UNC the run, and they just haven't taken it at times. And so I think there will be some lessons learned. I think Max saying that means he may have a little bit of a heavier hand in the play calling this week. That said, like, this is one of those games where if you bet, you're just completely ridiculous. Because, like, who knows with Virginia Tech? You know what I mean? Like, they have been, like, one of the programs that has continued to play, one of the most impacted by COVID. So, like, their defensive coordinator who's back has never called a game. Hendon Hooker, their quarterback, I don't believe has played yet this year. And so, like, it's just, like, I think North Carolina is going to win because of a 2-game body of empirical evidence and the fact that they have a great offensive line. That was one of the things that really struck me about seeing them in person. They have an offensive line that can impose its will. But I think I can't in good faith take Virginia Tech in this game just because we don't know what they are and what they will be.
Sully?
Oh, okay. I don't know what you're going to pick, Dan, but give me Virginia Tech. I'm sick of hearing about North Carolina. They're a paper tiger. We've heard about them all offseason. They played the two worst statistically rush defenses in the ACC. Khalil Herbert's going to run it down their throat. Give me the Hokies.
I'm taking UNC. I think that they got the scare under against BC that they will have needed to correct. And I don't know what, I just don't know what Virginia Tech is. But yeah, I'm with Pete on this one. If you're betting it, God help you. All right. Number 22, Texas at Oklahoma. How about that? We didn't even discuss the Red River rivalry.
Yeah, that's the state of things.
There's no Texas State Fair. There's no good teams in this game.
We didn't play Will You Eat It. That's really the disappointing part.
Well, there's nothing to eat.
It's the fair's closed down, right? So,
deep fried butter. Would you eat it? we could bring
at home. Yeah.
It was kind of what it was. Pat would say yes, everything. And All right. Oklahoma has been installed as a 2.5 favorite. Go ahead. Something's got to give here, Pete.
Texas is like the most frenetic team week to week to try to pick. I mean, they're and this has been like the whole Herman era. Oklahoma, it's dueling disasters, as we talked about in the last podcast and I wrote about last week. I'm going to go against my instinct and take Texas here. I think that Texas has shown like the consistent ability to move the ball with Sam Ehlinger, and I think Texas's defense sucks less. I think that would probably be like what it would come down to. So it would not surprise me if Oklahoma beat them by 21. Like, who knows with these teams? Oklahoma's certainly desperate. There's some pride there. I think, what is Lincoln Riley against Tom Herman? 3-1. Is that right? Because they split the 1 year. I'm going to go against my instinct and take Texas. I think look for Josh Moore to have a big game at receiver. He's really come on for the Longhorns.
Texas has 3 sacks through 3 games. Rattler's going to have some time back there, and he's going to be able to pick them apart a little bit and put together a decent game. Give me OU.
Yeah, you know, I'm going just against trend here because it just doesn't make sense. Texas has covered 5 years in a row in the regular season meeting, in the actual Red River Shootout in the Cotton Bowl. They have covered 5 years in a row. So they're not going to cover 6 in a row. That just seems like too much to ask. I think Oklahoma's just better. I do think that they will settle down and run the ball more. They had an opt-out and a transfer that hurt their running back situation. But I think Spencer Rattler, they're going to put the ball a little more in his hands, maybe ask him to run more. He's not like an electrifying runner, but he can do it productively. And so I think they are going to just settle in and don't screw around, and they're going to win. And with covering, if a field goal covers, then absolutely give me Oklahoma there.
I'm taking Oklahoma. I think Oklahoma has been good at times and then collapsed. I don't know that Texas has really been good at all in these first couple games. So I am going to go with that as my take is Oklahoma could be good. I'm just not sure what we're getting out of Texas. So I'll take Oklahoma even though Texas is getting the points. All right.
I've been, this is going to be a wild game, by the way. Like, it's going to be crazy.
It better,
you know, be. What I mean? Like it's just, I just really think the desperation combined with the ineptitude combined with the stage and the stakes. I do think it's going to be a must view Shaden Fraud.
Yeah. And if Oklahoma gets up, it's like, not like you're like, well, all right, that's it. Like, dude, these guys gag away leads like no one's business. Yeah. All right. Number 4, Florida at number 21, A&M. Jimbo Fisher on A&M's progress since he's arrived. 1, we expect to win the game. We didn't used to expect to win the game. Okay. It's nice. How about winning the game?
Yeah. How about actually winning? This They're is paying like, you $7.5 million not to just like expect my kids. To win.
Now I think I can do well on the test. Yeah, well, let's just do well. Not really. Attitude is not altitude. Sully, you go first. Oh, Gators are given 6.
I would make this the lock of the week if we weren't already picking it. Florida's offense is a thing of beauty. I have a man crush on Kyle Pitts. I think he's going to put up 6 touchdowns against A&M. He's going to match his season total. Give me the Gators.
The rare 6-pack touchdown call for the tight end.
All right. Pete?
The only thing A&M has going for them right now is desperation. I have a hard time drawing up a path to victory. Like, Kellen Mond turtled again when the stakes were highest with the pick 6 he threw against Alabama. Yeah, like that. The only like argument for A&M that I can conjure is that their back end is horrific. Now, look, it's Alabama, and Alabama's got elite skill. Alabama's skill is still better than that. Florida's defense is pedestrian. This could end up being a high-scoring game. It could be like a little bit of a shootout, but I ain't taking Jimbo. That it's going to be really interesting, and I wrote about this last week on Yahoo. If A&M leaves this game 1-2 with a Vanderbilt slog, and then they go to Starkville with their terrible secondary with the potential to go 1-3. Like this conference only SEC is going to eat up some of the better programs. And Jimbo right now is falling right into the meat grinder. So that's a long way to say, give me the Gators by 14.
Pat, say it quicker.
Yeah. Well, it's a great point though, that the conference losses are going to add up and you don't get the buffers of those easy non-conference wins. And that's going to wear on some people. I'm taking the Gators. Quick note here, and I'll try to be quick, Dan. A&M's first ever SEC game was against Florida at noon at Kyle Field in 2012. I was there with Mike's Live the night before they went to a dinner. They wouldn't let me go to the dinner. They let me come in afterwards when everybody was drunk, and some A&M booster popped off and said, "In 5 years, we'll be the controlling brand in this state." And it really hadn't really worked out. They may be just as good as Texas, but the whole state is not very good. So never mind.
Really, all they've done is invited the other SEC schools into Texas to take the great players from Dallas and Houston. That's been their SEC legacy so far. They were so chesty, those A&M fans, during their Menzel years.
UTEP is 3-1. Let's not trash UTEP, please. I'm taking the Gators. The Kyles will take care. I don't know how this is only 6. That's the only thing that's scaring me. Is what do they know that I don't? The only reason A&M is ranked 21 is because there's like 30 teams playing. I mean, they're not ranked if the Big Ten starts this week. So I have no idea how they're ranked. Totally baffling. Except this is the vote. Where's that poll attack? We need Gary Paradis to do the poll attack.
Yeah.
All right, Sully. Here's your game. Volunteers at Bulldogs. Georgia is giving 12.5 games at 3:30 on CBS. Tennessee is one of 2 teams without a turnover this season. Kansas State is the other. I saw an unbelievable stat from the Lincoln paper. Kansas State and Nebraska have the same record since Nebraska last won a conference title, which is like 1999.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing.
Yep. But anyway, they're almost identical. Not completely identical, almost, but very close.
Yep. Anyway, has nothing to do with this game. Meanwhile, Kirby Smart is 15-9 against ranked opponents. Sully is on the record as taking Tennessee to cover. Pat, go ahead. I'll let you pick, but yeah. I think I know your pick too.
Yeah, I'm taking Georgia. The one thing, if the weather's bad, it could be an equalizer. This could end up being 17-10 or something, or 17-14. But if all things are equal and both teams can play to their fullest ability, Georgia has a lot more ability and a lot more experience in these situations, and Georgia's going to win and cover.
Yeah, we dove into it, so I'll be quick. I think Georgia wins and covers, and I really just think this dog defense is going to be one of the 2 or 3 elite in college football this year, and this is their forum to show it.
I'm taking Georgia as well, but I would go with something Pat said. If that hurricane is coming through and it is raining like crazy.
90% chance on Saturday, boys.
Yeah, I mean.
Sure you don't want to change your pick?
It's a scary do not bet this game until 3:29 ET.
Last time there was a remnants of a hurricane coming through, Alabama, granted much better team, blew the doors off of Georgia, so that's a nice sign.
Well, ability to run the ball should help. I have no idea. This is going to be a swamp. Don't pick this thing on a Wednesday, but I'm going to take Georgia. All right, number 7 Miami at number 1 Clemson. Clemson's given 14. Clemson 31-18 under Dabo versus ranked teams. I'm guessing that number is really good of late. 7:30 on ABC. We'll all be watching. Pat, I'll start with you.
These are the kind of games Clemson lives for. And I did the gut on the Clemson Zoom calls as well this week. And you could tell Miami had gotten their attention by, you know, having a little bit of Miami, a little chip, a little swag, a little chesty. And so Clemson's like, oh, really? Oh, you want to do that? Okay, let's go. So that's when you've got Clemson's attention and you think it's a challenge, that's when you see the best out of Clemson. They're going to, I think, not just win and not just cover, but perhaps just blow the doors off of them.
Yeah, I think going back earlier, I think Clemson's defense is able to disrupt the flow, the timing, the tempo of Miami's offense. This is really the first time they're going to be going up against, you know, exponentially better talent, for a way to put it. I like the direction Miami's going in. I really like the changes Manny Diaz has made. He's really proven to be proven savvy early on there. There have a lot of optimism for Miami long term. In the short term, I think Clemson beats him by 21.
We're getting pulled to sleep a little bit by Miami's defense. They're certainly stout, and there's some question marks for Clemson on the offensive line. So that should be a good little mashup right there. But yeah, I think Dabo wins it running away in the end. Give me the Tigers.
I haven't loved Clemson's offense, but 14 is enough. Miami's going to have to prove it to me. I will take Clemson on that. All right, lock of the week time. Who has got their lock of the week ready and wants to go first?
Texas Tech rolls in as a 12.5-point underdog to the mighty Cyclones. I don't think any Big 12 team is 12.5 points better than any other Big 12 team this year. And Texas Tech, quite frankly, look, they're 1-2. They wheezed by Houston Baptist in the opener. They had Texas beat. And obviously K-State beat them by 10 last week on the road. I just think they have enough. It wasn't like Iowa State stoned Oklahoma. They outscored them. I just think Texas Tech has enough skill and enough talent on the outside and enough offensive firepower to be in this game. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if Texas Tech won, but I don't think, like, all of a sudden, you know, we're just gonna declare Iowa State as some juggernaut that's going to be disposing everyone by 3 touchdowns. So I really like the points here, and I will not predict a Texas Tech victory, but I will predict a comfortable cover in a, like, 52-48 kind of Big 12-y game. So I always hate picking Big 12 games for lock of the week because, like, they're just so frenetic. But here we are. I am guns up.
I got mine.
Go ahead, Sully.
All right. Florida State, terrible. Terrible. Get it. Notre Dame is laying 20.5. Love that number, specifically the little hook towards the 21. Give me the Irish big over Florida State.
Are we allowed to have the same lock of the week? Because that was mine.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was thinking about that one too.
Put me down for Notre Dame. They are rested up. They've gotten through the team meal. Florida State stinks. They got a good offense. They look great against South Florida, who I know is terrible, but so isn't Florida State. Boom. I'm taking Irish. They'll win by 3 touchdowns. So I'm with Sully on that. Pat, finish this up.
Okay, I'm going Big 12 here against Pete's counseling. Sully, what do you have for the line on Kansas State TCU?
Kansas State TCU, it is, we'll give you 9.
Yeah, TCU, okay. Give me Kansas State to cover the 9. TCU, I looked in recent years, when they beat Texas, they lose the next game because beating Texas is a big deal to TCU. And so I am counting on that once again being a bit of a deflator. In 2016, they beat Texas and then lost to Kansas. They were a 3-point favorite to Kansas State and lost by 24. 17, they lost to Texas and turned around and lost to Oklahoma. In 19, they beat Texas, turned around and lost to Oklahoma State. So they're going to lose this game, or at least they're not going to cover the 9. Kansas State, again, doesn't beat themselves. Give me the Wildcats.
So we're taking, you guys are picking against both of the, we're going to call them the hangover games, TCU, yep, and Iowa State.
Yep. Yeah. That's a great pick, Pat. Like, I can't fathom how, well, K-State gets a bunch of guys back too. Remember they had those 3 defensive backs back. Yeah. And again, yeah, I don't know that factually, but they've missed their 2 weeks, numbers, contact tracing, COVID, all that stuff. So yeah, it's stunning that TCU is a 9-point favorite.
Yeah.
All right. That's our show. We'll be back to overreact to it all on the Overreaction Monday. See where we went wrong or where we went right. Talk to you all then. Please continue to subscribe. Share us on social media. Tell your friends. Play us at your tailgates. Whatever you got to do. We need all the help we can get. Enjoy the big weekend. Talk to you then.